desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever may be the case in whatever time zone you're residing in. How you doing? This is the weekend edition of Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and what a day today. You're just not going to believe it, because I certainly didn't. It's just incredible. I got up this afternoon. Yes, that's right. I get up in the afternoon. I don't get up in the morning. I get up in the afternoon. Even during the long months of retirement, I continued to be a night person. And so I got up this afternoon, and I rumbled in here with my first cup of coffee and brought up the Coast to Coast AM website, and boom! Right between the eyes, it hit me. It said, Art Bell returns to WABC, effective immediately. It said, WABC, the big 50,000 watter from New York City, has picked up the weekend edition of Coast to Coast. You can now catch the Saturday into Sunday and the Sunday into Monday shows from 1 to 5 a.m. on 770 WABC. I mean, holy crap, I almost pooped some sort of concrete product right on the spot. You see, nobody had told me, nobody mentioned to me that we were going to be in New York City tonight, back on WABC. Nobody. And so I caught it on the website. And I went, whoa! And somehow they found an old photograph of me when I was actually at WABC. I was a blast. And so they had that up there with the story. And I'm telling you, I swear to you, I had not a clue. I just was blown away. You've got to understand, aside from, of course, being the number one radio market in the United States, next to our good friends at KFI in Los Angeles, WABC is it's my alma mater. I grew up around the Northeast. You know, I lived in Connecticut. I lived in New Jersey. I lived in New York. I lived all around. I lived in Maryland when I lived there. I listened to WABC for all of my childhood. And so, to me, you know, little makes me nervous these days, but getting back on WABC, just incredible. The way it happened today was as funny as it gets. At any rate, it did happen, and so I guess we are on in New York City. Hey, New York. I guess we're on in New York City. It means a lot to me. It means more than I can describe to you. I listened to Cousin Brucey as I was growing up. I mean, that was my radio station all my young life. And so when we first achieved New York and WABC, back during the earlier syndicated version of the show, a couple retirements ago or so, it meant a great deal then, and it means a whole lot right now. Just before airtime, I got the following email, which I think is funny. This just came from Kathy, good old Kathy in Woodbridge, New Jersey, who says, hey, Art, things are beginning to get back to normal. The great Art Bell debuts again tonight on WABC Radio here in New York City. They have, and this kills me, they have none other than Curtis Sliwa doing a commercial about your return. In the promo, it starts out with your wonderful laugh, and then you hear Curtis say, quote, I thought I was rid of that loony kazoony from parts unknown. Parump! Anyway, but I was wrong. Art Bell returns to WABC Radio on weekends. They've been playing it all week long, so they knew. I didn't. They knew. She goes on, it's great. Imagine Curtis being forced to promote your show. He bows down to the master, Curtis of all humanoids. I love it. Kathy Woodbridge. All I can say is, I doubt he volunteered to do that. And so, Phil Boyce, who is the program director and director of all things at WABC, must have the same sort of perverted sense of humor that I do. Thank you for making Curtis do that. God. Just incredible. So that's how the day began. It's been quite a day. Now, my webcam, if you get a chance, if you go up to the website, coasttocoastam.com, you'll notice in the upper left-hand corner it says Art's webcam. You might click on that. This is a photograph of my house. Now, it's from the back of the house, and the way this photograph got taken was kind of interesting. I've got a friend here in town, in Trump, who owns a helicopter, And he kept telling me, come on, let's go, let's go, let's take a ride, let's go. I'll take you for a ride. I said, okay. So I took my camera. I mean, how are you going to go on a helicopter ride above your own house and above, you know, the town and everything without a camera? So I took a pretty good digital camera with me, and we hovered above the back of my house, and I took this is one of the photographs I took. And by the way, it's kind of interesting because, as you know, I'm a ham radio operator, and you're looking down on a 100-foot tower. You're seeing that 100-foot tower from above, which is kind of cool. And that's the picture I have on my ham radio QSL card. It's pretty cool. Anyway, that picture is there so you can see actually where I live, and when you notice a lack of great amounts of foliage, it's because I live in the desert! So we have kind of a desert motif here. We have red rocks. That's what you're seeing in the front of the yard there. And we have to go out and mow the rocks every now and then. Not. So I thought I would put up a picture of my home, and there it is, for those of you who have been wondering. Now, I want to announce that I'm going to be doing Ghost to Ghost AM. We've had a million emails about that question. George asked me if I would do Ghost to Ghost on Friday night, Saturday morning, the 31st of October, and of course I will. That will be an entirely caller-driven program. I've had a million emails about that. So, yes, this year I will be doing Ghost to Ghost Friday night, Saturday morning. So that means I do three whole days that week, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday. Confirmed. I will do that. Now, if you have any guest suggestions or otherwise wish to get to me, and usually if you're going to make a guest suggestion, the best thing to do is give me a way to get hold of that guest. It makes it an awful lot easier. My email address remains the same, and that is ArtBell, that's ArtBell, at mindspring.com, ArtBell@mindspring.com, or alternately, ArtBell@AOL.com. So, with that, let's look at what's going on in the world very quickly. President Bush on Saturday offered a portrait of Iraq as a country where life is returning to normal after the war, insisting that while Iraq, he says, is making progress despite a steady drumbeat of bad news. The president said that progress was coming as a result of his clear strategy, not thought by the Democrats to be that clear, really. A team of 18 doctors began complicated separation surgery Saturday in an attempt to give 2-year-old co-joined twins at the head, mind you, brain, even co-joined. They're starting to do the brain part of it now. These two are from Egypt, and one or both may not make it. It is a very, very risky operation. Can you imagine being co-joined at the brain, at the head, at the, you know, your brain? And by the way, congratulations, New York. I bet you guys are all jumping up and down anyway. The pitching battle for the ages, that's what they call it, the pitching battle for the ages lived up to the billing. Not just because Roger Clemens and Pedro Martinez were on the mound in a game that featured brawls, brushbacks, and plenty of bad blood. My kind of game, bad blood. Clemens pitched the New York Yankees past the Boston Red Sox 4-3 Saturday for a 2-1 lead in the best of 7 for the championship series. So, then there was, of course, the big shock on Friday. Not such a big shock to me. Rush Limbaugh admitting, saying Friday, well, he issued the following statement. Why don't I just say what he said? You know, I've always tried to be honest with you and open about my life, so I need to tell you today that part of what you've heard and read is correct. I am addicted to prescription pain medication. I first started taking prescription painkillers. This is very important. Some years ago when my doctor prescribed them to treat post-surgical pain following spinal surgery. Unfortunately, the surgery was unsuccessful, and I continued to have severe pain in my lower back and also my neck due to herniated discs. I am still experiencing that pain. Rather than opt for additional surgery for these conditions, I chose to treat the pain with prescribed medication. The medication turned out to be highly addictive. And I won't read the rest of the statement. Suffice it to say, following that program and that statement, Rush went into a 30-day or so rehab situation, which is going to be rough going for him. And I want to say this. I understand, believe me, I understand back pain. There is nothing in the world worse than back pain. It would take me and turn me into a complete blinking pretzel. I mean, I could not stand. I could not lie down. I could not sit. I could not do anything without these horrible, racking, jumping nerves in my back. It was horrid. Without painkillers, you wouldn't want to live. I'm being very serious with you. You would not want to live. So I know many, because I got many emails after I made the last statement I made about Russia. Many people are, of course, using this to the max. People who have disagreed with Rush and find him less than pleasant have used this to hit him and bang him over the head with. But he's just human like everybody else, not a lot different. I think people tend to put talk show hosts and people in the media up on some sort of pedestal they don't belong on, really. Rush, of course, is enormously talented, but, I mean, we're all just people. And if he had the kind of pain that I had, and I've taken prescription painkillers as well, though I always fought, and I could never take them, going on the air. That was always the problem for me. I just couldn't do it. I could do it in the morning, and then I could begin to walk a little bit, never straight, but walk a little bit, and so I'd take a pill in the morning. But I couldn't take one to go on the air, and I refused to do that because, of course, you wouldn't be very clear-headed, would you, if you did that? So I never did, and on those nights, I would miss the broadcast. My guess is that that Rush went ahead and did them in order to do his broadcast. So I understand a lot of people are just going to let the poo-poo fly his way because you just plain don't like Rush. But he's human like anybody else. I'm very sorry he's hooked on these, and I hope that I wish him nothing but well, and I have faith that he will come through this as strong as ever. He's a very, very strong person. So from me to you, Rush, good luck, buddy. We'll be right back. If you've ever heard that sound before, the hair on the back of your neck is straight up right now. That's the sound of Bigfoot, of Yeti. And it was recorded in the forest. Now, Siberian scientists have found what they're calling, well-preserved furry limb of a mysterious creature that might be the legendary Yeti. This paw, I show a photograph of it here, was found frozen in the permafrost high up in the remote Altai Mountains, like the Alps. The Altais are becoming warmer and melting, exposing the preserved bodies of frozen people and animals. One mountain climber said, I turned the limb over, I guess he's the one who found it, examined the sole of the foot, and I thought it looked rather unusual, so I decided to bring it back with me. Good thing. Scientific tests and x-rays show the bones are several thousand years old, but no one's been able to identify the creature yet. There's a long tradition of Yeti or the abominable snowman sightings in that area. The creature probably walked on snow. This is very interesting. Since the sole of the foot, here's how well it's preserved. The sole of the foot is furry. The reason for that? The creature walked on snow. A newly discovered kind of ape has been found in the Congo as well. It's a new mystery ape. They're now doing DNA fingerprints to find out more about that one. But this one that they found may be the abominable snowman. It may be Yeti. Most of us, I think, cringe. This is from unknowncountry.com. Most of us, I think, cringe. I know I do. Every time we turn on the news, you hear about more American dead. In Iraq, more soldiers dead, right? But they are not just dying from stealth attacks and car bombs. They're contracting mysterious illnesses as well. In fact, suicide, another cause of death there. But James Conahy, is it C-O-N-A-C-H-Y, says the Washington Post reported that more than 6,000 service members have been medically evacuated from Iraq since the beginning of the new war. 4,500 of those non-combatant injuries. For every soldier who's been killed, another 15 have become so ill that they've had to be flown back to the U.S. What could be causing all of this? Well, I'm sure you've heard the reports of pneumonias. Some people are speculating it may be the vaccines that they had to take, you know, the shots they had to take before going to Iraq. But those are awfully high numbers. Now, I'm not familiar with how many combat deaths or how many casualties we have compared to the number of deaths, but this does seem to be unusually high. Trevor Hadley and Roy Galanick were reunited in a kind of a kinetic way this week. The two former Wiley High School classmates were hospitalized Monday following, get this, separate bouts with lightning bolts. These are two buddies, right? Hadley, 25, a rehabilitation technician for Hendrick Medical Center, strolled out into the parking lot to pick up the van he drives to shuttle patients to medical appointments with raindrops falling. Hadley decided he better take shelter, snagged an umbrella from a co-worker. The funny thing is, he said, I never use an umbrella, never carry one. But I did. Hadley said he was standing in a puddle of water, bad, right, and trying to open the van door. So he had his hand on the metal. He was holding the, oh, I can see how this happened. I put the key in the door, and the umbrella began to shake. You remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind? Remember the mailboxes? Like that. The next thing he says, I remember, quoting, was a flash. Hadley said when he regained consciousness, he realized he'd been thrown about 20 feet and was lying in another pool of water. He said, I remember thinking, quote, wow, I'm wicked hot, end quote. I tried to remove my legs, and it just wasn't happening. Lucky for Hadley, he was hit in the parking lot of a hospital. Yeah, not bad. Now, a few miles southwest of town, Roy Galanick, 27, his friend, was installing a dryer in the house he's building in a town called Eula, I guess it is, E-U-L-A. I was holding the dryer clamp, he said, and all I saw was this flash. I got thrown across the room. The next thing I remember, I woke up on the ground, rolling around and screaming in pain. Galanick said he knew he'd been struck by lightning because the power at the house hadn't even been hooked up yet. Now, these are two friends. They're both going to recover. Now, the odds of getting struck by lightning for any of us would be about 1 in 700,000. The odds for two friends in the same town to get hit during the same storm probably can't even be calculated. I wonder if they've acquired any sort of power. Because it's, once again from unknowncountry.com, because it's so far north, Alaska is showing the effects of global warming long before any of the other 49 states. Forests that should be green are brown due to the spruce bark beetle over the past 15 years. It's killed more trees in Alaska than any other insect in North America's recorded history. Ecologist Ed Berg blames the high beetle population on the weather. He says, we had a really long run of summers. John Whitfield writes in Nature.com that in Prince William Sound, boats have to navigate through a large number of icebergs which are calving off the Columbia Glacier. Alaska is already famous for its mosquitoes, so big they're referred to as a state bird. It's true. I lived there once. Alaska's sea ice had the biggest melt yet this summer. And the winter was unusually mild. Remember the picture last week up on the website of the Arctic? Oh, my God. Two-thirds of the Arctic has melted. I mean, it was a shocking photograph. He goes on, it's hard to tell how much of Alaska's climate change is due to global warming and how much to natural climate cycles. There seems to be a 60-year variation in temperatures between east and west. So when one side heats up, the other one cools down in a few years. This could, he says, flip again and reverse Alaska's recent warming trend. Meteorologist Gunter Weller says, quote, what you see here is an indicator of what can be expected in the rest of the world, end quote. You think about that one a little bit. It's coming. No. Scratch that. It's here now. The weather changes already have begun. All we can do is adapt. Get ready. Make changes before we can't. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
Riders of the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, and factor out alone. Riders on the storm.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Indeed so. Can you tell I like this song? It's really cool. It's done by a young lady who is African, French, and English. Well, actually, she sings in African, French, and English. Remarkable piece done by somebody called Matisse, a young lady called Matisse. Really cool stuff. It was used in one of the episodes of Dead Like Me, which Showtime was airing. Now, they've aired the last for the season, so you may not be able to see it for a while. But when it comes back on, you got to check it out. It's called Dead Like Me. Pretty cool show, I'm here to tell you. We'll be right back. The following is such a non-trivial item that I really have to cover it. And you know how all of us have wondered, haven't we, about the shape of our own universe. And this article is entitled Shape of Universe Known Long Ago. Scientists now know the universe is not infinite and that space is curved in on itself in the shape of basically a soccer ball. Interesting, there's a scientific name for this, but I'll call it a soccer ball. Interestingly enough, the ancient Greeks, including Plato, thought the universe was made up of this geometrical shape, and the artist Leonardo da Vinci, who was the recipient of much ancient knowledge, studied these shapes as well. Astronomers think that this shape is the best way to account for the newest satellite observations. David Whitehouse writes in the BBC News Online that though scientists now think the universe is finite, we can never reach the edge of it because this shape would keep pushing us back toward the center again. In other words, we think we're making progress about the universe, but we're really not. We're really just climbing over another edge, which is more or less like a faceted soccer ball, if you can imagine that. In fact, if we went out one side of it, we'd be pushed back into the other. Try and wrap your mind around that one. So, how are they figuring all this out? Cosmic background radiation is the echo of the Big Bang. And so reading the echo, I mean, after all, radar is nothing, and sonar is nothing but energy sent out, and you read the returning waves. And so like the initial boom from the Big Bang, we read what's coming back, and from that we conclude that the universe itself is as described, like a sort of like a giant faceted soccer ball. And while you might think you're making progress toward the other end of it, you're not, because there is no other end of it. It's finite. You'll get right back to where you began from. So the next time somebody asks you how high is the sky, you might have some kind of response for them. Now, here is a gentleman who faxed me, if I can find his name. Yeah, here it is. He faxed me, a few hours ago, I would say. This is Brent. And Brent is somewhere, I think, up in Oregon, Brent?
Yes, uh-huh.
Where are you?
Right outside of Salem, Oregon.
Right outside of Salem, Oregon. All right. It caught my attention because the email that you sent me, not a fax, the email you sent me, said something about giant globs of gelatin-like material forming in your yard, not dropped from wherever, but forming in your yard. Is that, I mean, fill us in.
Yeah, as far as we can tell, it looks like it might be dropping, but we don't know for sure.
What leads you to believe it might be dropping?
Just the pattern of where it's at in comparison to where the trees are.
Is there like a splash pattern to it? I mean, like when it hit, it went, you know, or whatever?
No, it's pretty odd looking stuff. It's just a gelatin.
Is it? It's clear.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And it's not underneath the trees, but out in areas where the trees are not.
How thick is it?
Well, it can be as thick as half an inch or just smaller globs of it. And it's landed on our picnic table. I've seen it in the grass. It was up on the play fort for the kids area.
Does it appear to be alive?
No, nothing like that.
And how does it taste, Brent?
I wouldn't have any idea, nor do I intend to find out.
You're not going to pop your lip. Chicken. Okay, well, yes, you know, I hate to say this, and I'm just going to warn you here, Brent. There are others who have had the experience you're having, and they've taken this material in to have it tested. And some laboratories, in fact, most who have tested this kind of thing, come back and report human genetic material.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah. Now, have you ever actually seen it dropping or forming or appearing?
No, that's the funny part. It just appears, and we don't know for sure if it is coming down or if it's just forming. We don't know for sure. It started about probably a year and a half or 2 years ago, and it only happens once in a great while. It happened again today, and so I did collect some samples of it so that I could get it tested.
Well, I'm going to be extremely interested, of course, in the results of the testing. Any idea when you might get it back?
No, I haven't actually taken it anywhere yet. I did email someone at Oregon Health Sciences to see if they could point me in the right direction as to who could do some testing on it.
You married?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What, have children?
Yes.
What does the rest of your family think?
They think it's pretty strange. It's just the weirdest thing we've ever seen, and it just appears occasionally, so it's not like, I mean, you kind of forget about it for a long time, and then it happens again.
Huh. Do you have any pets?
Yes, we do. We have a dog.
Does he go out and investigate it and sniff it and whatever?
No, I've never noticed the dog going around it.
Well, listen, Brent, I wish you luck with your whatever it is. So I hope you'll call me when you get the lab results, and I hope it doesn't have human stuff in it.
I'll do that. If anybody has any suggestions on where to take it in and have it tested, I'd be glad to hear that, too.
All right, Brent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, and we'll have Brent keep us informed about gelatin-like clear material. As I said in the past, it's had human DNA stuff in it. Not pleasant east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi. Hello there.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Good to hear you again.
Well, thank you. Where are you?
I am calling from Janesville, Wisconsin on WCLO Radio.
Okay, welcome.
And earlier in the last couple of days, listening to the situation that's developed for Rush.
Yes.
You know, in particular, listening to his comments about the failed back surgery.
Oh, yes.
I myself see a pain specialist for chronic severe pain, and I take narcotics only as prescribed by the doctor,
yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to function normally without it.
Yeah, I really, you know, if somebody doesn't have the trouble, it's impossible to explain to them how horrible it is. It really is. People just don't buy it, you know. I guess they think of malingerers and insurance scams and crap like that, but I'm telling you, if you really do have severe back problems, they're so intractable. If you didn't have the pain treatment, being dead would be better.
Exactly. You know, I mean, because your brain ceases to function. I mean, it's one
yeah.
thing to be physically disabled, but yeah. it's another thing when it invades your mind.
That's right.
And there's nothing left for you.
That's it.
You know, I really feel that the crime that's been committed here is that he's failed to be treated adequately, because he's been able to perform his job as our talk radio host, exemplary. There's no way that you can, all those days he's been on the air, he wasn't under the influence. He was adequately medicated. The crime he supposedly committed is he chose to medicate himself more mm-hmm. than what was prescribed.
Mm-hmm. Well, he got hooked. He got hooked. I mean, it does happen. He got hooked.
It can happen.
Yeah, it
but
can happen.
But if you're in pain, they say that technically, I mean, while you're physically dependent on it, the psychological addiction isn't there. And that's why I think what's happened is he wasn't adequately medicated by a physician.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Thank you. I couldn't agree more. People in pain in America have been woefully under-medicated for real pain. And the reason for that is the DEA. And, of course, they've got a job and they've got the drug war, right? They've got the drug war. And as part of the drug war, they watch what physicians do. And physicians who prescribe too much pain medication get in trouble. So you can't imagine, really, honestly, you can't imagine how awful it is. Now, for the new listeners at WABC, that's great. For you newbies in New York to the program, since its return about an hour ago, my back is significantly better. I opted not to have back surgery because, frankly, the doctor sat down and told me, man to man, that was about a 50-50 chance of success. You'll notice in the story about Rush, it said unsuccessful back surgery. Well, in my case, they said about a 50% chance that it would not turn out well. And the downside of not well would be being crippled for the rest of your life, not being able to walk. And so when you balance that in your head like you do Las Vegas odds about various things, right, you think, well, horrid, intractable pain on this side and maybe crippled for the rest of my life on this side. I think I'll wait for this surgery, and that's what I did. But then you require pain management of some sort because it is pretty horrible. So, you know, he's a human. You can understand how that kind of thing would happen, how people would get hooked. That's just how it is. But, I mean, it's really an intractable, horrible pain that people have had it, know it, the others don't and just can't. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Yes, sir.
Yes. My name is Walter. I'm from Eatonville, Washington.
Yes, sir.
And and I believe this month, the 13th of this month, is the anniversary of the miracle of Fatima.
Oh,
where
yes,
the sun
yes.
was moved by supposedly by Mary.
Yes.
And or the spirit of Mary. And I believe that Mary's been appearing to me over the last couple of years now, and telling me to help get the word out about the miracle there and the power that Jesus and the saints and those
guys. So you think Mary has appeared to you?
Yes.
In what form? In what way? And you know, is this in your mind or is it?
Well, I don't know, but in the actual form of a spirit appearing to me, it's the same kind of thing as like I can see it and nobody else can, like. Just like the kids of Fatima supposedly had the same experience, and it's kind of hard for me to, you know, I don't even know if it's real or not myself, you know, because how can I prove something that no one else can see?
You can't.
And so, like, one thing that has been happening to me in the last few months is that I've been looking up at the moon and at Mars and praying the rosary and asking Mary, if you can really have this power, go ahead and move that in front of me. And I swear I believe that it's been moving, and I have a friend of mine who almost passed out when he thought it was moving.
That actually brings up a pretty interesting subject, sir. And you say your friend saw it, and so when you're talking about miracles, then you always have to wonder, I guess a little bit, at least I always have, whether miracles are actually apparent to all, or whether they're visual manifestations that only certain witnesses and people associated with the immediate event see, and that others do not. So you can't know about somebody like this. Oh, by the way, coming up in the next hour, we're going to be interviewing an abductee. I think, you know, Robert Miles is his name. He doesn't refer to himself as an abductee, but that certainly is what happened to him. And I scheduled this guest myself after he sent me direct information about his experience. He's written a book called Safe Space, which is in part fiction. However, his experience and the experience from which he drew the information to write the book is not. And what you'll be hearing tonight is his personal story. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi, Joe from New York. First time I ever called with you. Welcome.
You've got a breaking up cell phone, but welcome.
Well, I'm single over here.
You have bad signal where
you are. I hear you well.
Okay, good.
Okay, so I enjoyed that last with a listener on that Fatima, because I was thinking you're back on Columbus weekend and the 13th Fatima, that Mary appeared. 70,000 people saw that miracle over there.
With regard to the third secret of Fatima, as you know, I did many interviews with Father Malachi Martin.
He watches over you.
I believe he does, sir. And
I see him, yeah.
And I can tell you without any qualification, we have not heard the real third secret of Fatima. We have not heard the full third secret at all.
I agree with you. Do you know about Mary appearing in Egypt? They saw her on television?
No, that's one I hadn't heard of.
Photographed. Oh, millions saw her in Egypt back in the 60s. And it did stop a war between the Christians and the Muslims. And it's amazing. It's on websites somewhere.
Well, if you have any information on that event at all, I would heartily appreciate an email. If you can email me any links on that. That's really so. I wonder if that's true, that Mary appeared on television in Israel and in some Arab nations. Is that what occurred? Huh. How could news of that magnitude not be apparent in the rest of the world? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
I was wondering what you would think of organizing a mass thinking on Russia's behalf, like you have done before for other people or things. I'm not sure what you called it, but I remember you doing it.
Yeah. Okay, I'll comment on that. I think that Rush is in good hands with regard to his recovery from narcotic addiction. He's probably going through hell right now, but I think he's in good hands. Professionals, probably the best. You know damn well he can afford the best, so that's where he is now. With regard to the use of mass consciousness, I have great reservations about it. But for the most very urgent of reasons, I would not do it. And I was rather cavalier early on with my use and experimentation of that incredible power. And I think it may be a power greater than nuclear power and what we have discovered thus far. The mass concentration capabilities, I believe, can change the weather, can change the world. But we don't know much, if anything, about the power. You all know about the experiments going on at Princeton. And, by the way, I want to have some guests back on that project, which tries to keep a very low profile, so they don't really like to talk about it on the radio or television. But it's an incredibly important subject. one that I have great, great, great reservations and cautions about using. I guess part of the reason for that is because I proved to myself, along with those of you who are here to hear the experiments, that it works. There's no maybes, there's no questions about it, but mass concentration can create rain, mass concentration can change the weather, mass concentration can probably do anything. And so its direction is something that I've become extremely cautious about. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Going once. Going twice. Gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, this is Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Actually, I'm west of the Rockies.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you your opinion of Ed Dames, specifically why you guys keep having him on when he appears to be wrong about everything he predicts.
No, he's not.
Well,
I mean, that would be your observation, but he's not wrong about everything. That's just something his detractors say, and I assume that you are you're one of those, right?
I guess.
There was a big baby formula scandal that was in the news recently, and he had predicted something about that. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
You didn't.
But I can tell you one thing.
There were a large number of things that Ed Dames hit right on the money, and some that are time-sensitive, that is not such a good function of remote viewing. They have a very hard time with timelines because he sees something that occurs that has not yet occurred doesn't mean that it's not going to occur, sir.
Well, he did say that soon after the Gulf War started, North Korea would set off a nuke somewhere, and he said in his
No.
He said this to George Norrie about 3 months, 4 months ago.
Okay, well, that may be, but again, it's timelines. What he has said specifically is that North Korea would be the first power to use a nuclear weapon in anger since the Second World War. That's what Ed Dames said. And the likelihood of his being right, particularly in view of recent news, I would say is higher than ever. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, back on the air in New York City.
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to fight.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may recharge at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Appropriate, because Robert D. Miles, who's coming up in a moment, is an ordinary guy who took an extraordinary ride. Boy, did he take a ride. We'll talk with Robert in a moment. By the way, thank you for the pass blast. Rob in Sherman Oaks, California. He's, Sherman Oaks, that's where the network headquarters is. He says your local board op in New York City at WABC says he can provide you with the Curtis Sliwa promo. Ha ha ha, yes, by all means. Send it on. because much as Curtis may put up a brave front and utter things like the loony kazoony from parts unknown when referring to me, it is nothing but a brave front because, you see, even during my months of retirement, Curtis called me for instructions on a weekly basis. Every week without fail, Curtis was on the phone saying, "Arf, what do I do now?" And I ran that man's life, just like I do every day, on a continuing basis. Don't know what he'd do without me. Robert D. Miles coming up in a moment. I said Robert Miles was a regular guy. Well, not really. I mean, he's a television and motion picture writer and producer with 30 years' experience. He has written and published numerous articles, nonfiction stories, an avid adventurer. Robert designed and built 4 sailing vessels, cruised to Hawaii, Baja, Mexico, and Honduras. Safe Space, his book, is a manifestation of his personal extraterrestrial experience. However, prior to this, he was a regular guy from a paranormal or UFO-logical perspective. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Art. Glad to be with you.
You're in a place called Surprise, Arizona?
That's right. It's actually on the outskirts of Phoenix.
Okay. Well, at any rate, welcome. Was I basically right about that? I mean, you were a sort of a regular person prior to the event we're going to talk about?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I lived a life just like anybody else, except that I was always drawn to adventure. And I had spent a lot of time working in shipyards as a welder and a fitter, and I got interested in boats and decided that I wanted to sail around the world. So ended up buying an old boat and one that was like Joshua Slocum sailed around the world in, a very old-fashioned.
You were really going to do it, Ron?
Oh, I was going to do it.
You're going to sail around the world. God, what an incredible dream.
Yeah, I think a lot of people out there in your listening audience probably have the same dream. Some of them have done it, too. And there's a lot of incredible people out there.
How many have died trying?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I know a lot have lived and had terrific experiences from it. I've known a lot of them.
I mean, if you're out in the middle of the Pacific and you hit a storm and you're by yourself, baby, that's one lonely, scary place to be. That's a big ocean out there.
You bet. After I built the first boat, Art, I went ahead and built a very modern design, and that was called the Trimaran, which has 3 hulls.
Right.
And built that in Portland, Oregon with my partner, and we sailed down the Oregon coast. We hit a tremendous storm, 100-mile-an-hour winds.
There you go.
We weren't experienced sailors, and so we learned a lot. We missed San Francisco completely. It blew us into Monterey, and then we went on down to San Diego and then sailed over to Hawaii and lived aboard the boat for a long period of time.
Now, that alone must have been one hell of a cruise from the coast all the way to Hawaii.
Yeah, it sure was. It actually took us 24 days, and we sat in the middle for 7 days with no wind.
Wow.
And, of course, in those days, it was very difficult to learn celestial navigation. So we used a noon sight method, and we actually hit Hilo right on the money, but we were all worried about it.
When you get out there and you lose wind, and you're in, what do they call that,
Well, they call it the doldrums.
The doldrums. When you hit the doldrums, is it like you start to wonder, hey, you know, we might die out here? I mean, after three days, say, of it, you'd start to wonder, wouldn't you?
Oh, not only do you wonder, you begin to worry because in our case, we were running short of food and supplies. We had calculated the voyage might take 20 days.
Right.
You know, and of course, we had a little bit, but we were getting pretty low by the time we saw 747 coming in over our head and landing there in the clouds because the island was a little bit obscured.
So
it was quite a feeling to make a landfall after making that voyage.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, that's no normal life. Anybody who would do the kind of things that you've done. So you built ships and did what? Sold them or?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, I did sell sell my vessels, and part of my experience is connected to that. But just to say, after the boat in Hawaii, I later went on to build a very large, at the time it was the world's largest catamaran, which had 3,000 square feet of living and working space.
No kidding.
It was a 100-ton displacement, and it had an 80-foot-tall mast and twin Peugeot diesels.
Wow.
And that was a ship that I designed, and it was constructed of wooden fiberglass, and it had some steel. But I had some partners, and it was an amazing construction project that took a little bit over a year to build, and then it was launched in Long Beach.
Now, would you declare that to have been your business? You were in the shipbuilding business, or what had you done prior to that? I mean, what's your background like?
Well, really, it was never my business. It was always my desire and to experience the adventure and to seek out the unknown.
But you spent, 30 years in motion picture writing and producing?
Right, and also in basic video production, doing lots of television commercials and corporate videos.
Okay, I know that world a little bit. So how do you get from that world to building ships?
Well, actually, it went the other way. I went from building the boats to having to have a way to support the boats.
Uh-huh.
And the media was very interested in those of us that were adventuresome back in those days. And they were always asking questions and wanting to, you know, do interviews and those kind of things. And so I had to start learning how to write press releases.
I see.
Then I got involved in San Diego with writing for the waterfront newspaper there, the San Diego Log, and I started producing on Channel 15. I did a couple of documentaries, one called Come Sail Away, which aired worldwide on cable, and some on gold mining and some on RVing and adventuring.
So you have no psychiatric record of distinction, do you?
Not of distinction. You know, there's a lot of people that have called me crazy over the years. That's
What I mean is no formal in-house stuff, right?
No.
Uh-huh. And you're not a drinker?
No, that's not to say I haven't had a drink or two.
That's fair, and you don't consume copious amounts of psychedelic drugs?
Not at all.
Not at all. So, I mean, I'm trying to set all this up for what they're about here, because it's kind of a big departure from what your life was until that moment when it happened, right?
Yes, and the moment when it happened was really the most startling thing that has ever occurred in my life.
Well, okay, where were you when it did happen?
Well, we were in the Hawaiian Islands, and we were aboard that first vessel. And I had sailed around the islands with my partner for almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the boat moored in Alawai Yacht Harbor in Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Art, it might be hard to believe for a lot of people out there, but after living that way, you know, the surfing, the diving, the living on the boat, the lifestyle.
The hard life you were enduring, yes.
Yeah, but it actually began to seem like there wasn't a lot to it. And I started asking myself the question, there's got to be more to life than this.
Uh-huh.
There's got to be some greater meaning there. There has to be something. I just didn't seem to have a feeling that I wanted to make the trip to sail around the world. And
this is perfect island that I'm on with an absolute paradise at my fingertips, the beautiful women in bikinis, the boats, the surfing. God, there's got to be more to life. But what?
But what? Yeah, and being able to live for basically 50 cents a day because there was lots of food and there was, you know, lots of opportunity to eat dinner and those kind of things. But I finally decided that I wanted to sell the boat, and my partner and I agreed to do that, and we had made the decision to sell the boat, and I was about to deliver the boat, and the morning that we were to deliver the boat, I woke up very, very early. I woke up about 4:30 in the morning.
Yes.
And on that vessel, I was laying in my bunk, which was a large double bed, looking up through an open skylight, and just kind of contemplating what was going to happen with my life.
I just want to stop you for 1 second. Are you certain that you woke up? I mean, this is a really important part of what's about to come, I think, because inevitably people will say, well, you were having, you know, some sort of sleep induced dream, vision, whatever. I mean, there's no question in your mind you woke up.
Well, I was wide awake.
You clearly know the difference between conscious states and unconscious states, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, and I was wide awake, and I'd been wide awake. And I was looking out through the skylight as the morning was, dawn was breaking there. And I looked at my clock, and it was just a couple of minutes after 5, and I knew that I had to get up and get with it pretty quick.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, the most incredible feeling of energy began to fill my entire stateroom. And there was a dazzling array of lights and color.
Lights and color, energy. Do you remember any shapes of any of these lights and color? That's really interesting. I've heard others who've had a similar experience explain the same thing. Some have seen geometric shapes. Some have seen bright colors, as you describe. I mean, exactly what?
Well, the colors were like a radiant spectrum of energy. They were not just colors of the rainbow, but violets and oranges and just the most incredible shades of pink. And the entire stateroom was filled with this aura, this tingling, and my body just vibrated.
And these appeared to be manifesting themselves in thin air in front of you?
All around me.
All around you.
The entire stateroom was filled with it.
Okay.
And in that next instant, a beautiful woman materialized in the walkway right next to my bunk.
Really?
And she was the most, I would have to say, the most real thing that I had ever, I've ever seen. And, you know, when she materialized there, it absolutely, the energy intensified. And it would, the only thing I could describe is people are familiar, like, with 110 if they stick a finger in the socket when they shouldn't.
Yes,
but
I am.
But this was like building from, like, 110 to 220 to 440 to the point that my whole body was vibrating.
Got it.
With her being in my proximity and me being in her presence.
Okay. Again, a question. If there was going to be a manifestation in front of somebody like this, the beginning of an experience, think, folks, what do you think would relax the person more, to see some gray thing with weird eyes pop suddenly in front of you, some little typical gray alien, or a beautiful woman? Answer's easy, right? Beautiful woman every time.
I agree.
Yeah. So that.
I agree more with you.
What was your state of mind during this? I mean, were you frightened? Were you intrigued? Were you what?
Well, first of all, I said it out loud. I must be hallucinating or dreaming. This
uh-huh.
can't be real. And she said, "Yes, it is."
Oh.
And she began to talk to me.
Oh.
And as she spoke to me, I could just feel this incredible calmness. And, you know, I said, you know, how is this possible? And she said, we're friends.
So you were thinking normally. I mean.
Oh, yeah, totally. Logically, rationally.
Logically. So how can this be happening? And we're friends, she said.
That's right. And I think that everything we'll talk about tonight is not going to be about a frightening experience or about despair, but rather about hope and opportunity, because that's entirely what the safe space experience was and
uh-huh.
is.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, so she's a friend. Then what?
So she said to me that she wanted me to go to a briefing.
A briefing?
A briefing. And that I said, well, you know, why are you here?
Right.
And she said, we wanted you to know that we're here, and we wanted you to know about a mission and a purpose that is going to take place on planet Earth. and we want you to come to a briefing.
Okay. Did you ask any more questions, or did you just say, okay, on to the briefing, or what?
I said, okay, you know, first of all, there was no reluctance on my part. I didn't have any fear, Art. I didn't feel any sort of intimidation. It was not frightening.
But even though you've got a beautiful woman on your hands, people don't have colors and energy almost beyond description and beautiful women popping up out of thin air every day. So are you sure that you were in, I don't know, your right state of mind? I mean, to accept this calmly, as you just finished telling me, is not necessarily logical.
Well, and I don't think a lot of what we're going to be talking about is logical. Over the years, I've tried to logically figure it out. And the more I think that I try to put logic to it, although there has been some developments in science and in quantum physics and other things, but, you know, I think that some of this defies what we as a class zero society except as logic.
When you say there have been developments in physics and other sciences and areas, did you mean to say that confirm things that you learned?
Exactly, yeah. Things that I've learned and things that were told to me and things that, you know, people are experiencing out there. Things that to a primitive level society, and I would call Earth that, because we haven't even yet reached the point where we can contain and control the energies of our own natural resources, let alone the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are from a class 3 civilization which has the power to harness billions of suns.
Now, the class 0 to class 3 civilization thing, as you're well aware, is from Dr. Michio Kaku, who I'm going to have, by the way, back on the 19th, I think. But I'm sure that's where you're drawing this generality from.
Yeah, and it's, as you're absolutely right that he has talked about that in his book Hyperspace.
So how did you come to the conclusion you were dealing with what he would call a class 3 civilization, which is a civilization that has learned to harness the power of the universe, the power of many multitudes of suns, more power than we can imagine? How did you know you were dealing with something on that level?
Well, at the time, I absolutely didn't.
Uh-huh.
Since that time, you know, in an attempt to use logic and to figure out the experience, you know, I've read and researched and pursued, you know, every avenue that I could.
Sure.
But at that time, it was just a demonstration of what occurred throughout the ongoing experience that left me convinced and has altered my life.
And you're convinced, are you, Bob, that this... this was all real. There was nothing made up, nothing dreamed, no altered perceptions. This absolutely, positively all happened to you, that which you're about to describe, right?
Absolutely. And she even had me take her hand and touch her and feel her. And, you know, she said, you know, like, feel your own arm and feel your leg. This is real. This is happening to you.
Got you covered. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Robert D. Miles is my guest. He was taken aboard a craft and to a briefing. You're about to get the details. From the high desert in the middle of the night, moving through the night like a freight train, this is Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Yeah.
in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Robert D. Miles took a ride. In a moment, you're going to hear all about it. I'm Art Bell. In the nighttime, this is Coast to Coast AM. When you get people like Robert, you better listen to him, because this is happening all over the world. The kind of thing that happened to Robert is happening all over the world. Robert, when you touched this woman, you said, she said, go ahead and touch me and yourself to make sure you're awake and alert and alive, and you know you are. When you touched her, was she, well, did she appear to your eyes to be human?
Yes, she did. Or the energy field was not human, but her physical shape was very human. And very, very solid.
And when you touched her?
Very real.
And when you touched her?
Felt like a human.
Felt like skin.
It felt like skin, absolutely.
Okay.
And, but again, there was that tingling sensation that absolutely, it's like nothing that I had ever felt prior to that time. It was an absolute unique experience.
Okay. And then?
And then she said, you know, she had told me she wanted me to come to a briefing, and I said, okay. And she said, what I want you to do is I want you to go first to New York City.
New York City. Now, bearing in mind, you're in Hawaii, right?
I'm in Hawaii, Honolulu, Hawaii.
So she wants you to do what, hop the first available plane?
Well, that's where it gets really bizarre.
Okay.
She said, what I want you to do is imagine that you're there. And I said, I can't do that. I mean, I'd love to. I've heard about people that could, bilocate or transport themselves mentally.
She just wanted you to imagine you were in New York City.
Imagine you're in New York City. And I said, no, I can't do that. And she said, yes, you can. We'll help you. And she said, imagine you're in New York City. And I imagined that I was in New York City, and within an instant,
you were.
I was there.
Huh.
I was.
Where did you pop out?
LaGuardia Airport.
LaGuardia.
Yeah.
LaGuardia. Interesting. What do you need an airport for? All right, so you imagined New York, and there you are at LaGuardia. Do you remember anything of the process of this, I guess, teleportation? I don't know what else to call it.
Well, that's what I call it, because I remember a sensation, but it was almost, you know, instantaneous. There actually was a sense.
What kind of sensation? Now, sensations can be described. I once had the honor of being able to fly faster than the speed of sound between the United States and Paris, France. And as you pass the speed of sound, Robert, there is a kind of a, all I can describe it this way, your body feels like it goes forward a little and then back, you know, like there's acceleration. So you go forward a little bit, which is sort of like dipping through the barrier, and then back again with the acceleration. It's kind of a weird little subtle feeling, but that's what it feels like when you break the sound barrier. When you teleported, is there any similar feeling you can describe?
Well, it felt like a rush. You know, it just felt like I was just propelled, but it's so instantaneous. It was awesome.
Now, I know it's really hard to find words for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But a kind of a rush, as in, did you have a sensation of speed?
I had a sensation of movement.
Of movement.
Of movement. I knew that something had happened, but to describe that, it that there was, you know, I didn't have a headlong lurch through a long tunnel or anything like that.
Nothing like that.
But she had also told me that when I got there, to go up to the counter and get a ticket on the Jupiter flight. The Jupiter flight. And I told you it was going to get bizarre.
It's getting there, all right. Well, for one thing, I want to understand the other end of this teleportation. I mean, the average person, if they suddenly, bam, like that, were standing in LaGuardia when they'd been on a ship in Hawaii, they would fall down on the floor. They'd be disoriented. They'd, I don't know, something. I mean, were you just suddenly, boom, there?
I was there, probably 50 feet away from the ticket counter. And again, Art, there was no fear. And
but you were standing without any disorientation?
No disorientation whatsoever.
Okay.
I was even facing the ticket counter when I appeared there. And what is awesome about the entire experience is that there were other people in the terminal, but they didn't seem to be aware of my presence.
Well, I'll tell you this. If the average person went up to a United ticket counter and asked for a ticket to Jupiter, they'd meet Homeland Security.
That's for sure.
So she had instructed you. Was she still there when you got to LaGuardia?
No, she wasn't.
No, so you're by yourself.
I'm by myself.
A typical day at LaGuardia, huh?
Yeah, right.
All right, so... were you supposed to go to any counter?
No, I was, you know, she didn't give me detailed instructions, and honestly, I've thought about it a jillion times since that time, and all I can say is that I believe that possibly I was in another dimension, and I believe that because I feel like what I was doing and what was going on that dimension was overlaid over the existing activity that was going on in what we would call our three- or four-dimensional universe.
Like the Matrix.
Yeah. And, you know, I was there. I think James Redfield in Celestine Prophecy describes different kinds of experiences, and people do describe these things. So I don't think my experience is unique to... you know, to the planet. But
so
I think
so far, it's pretty unique to me. So let's get on with this. You went to the counter.
I went to the counter, and I did what I was told to do. I asked for a ticket on the Jupiter flight.
Yeah.
The person gave me a small little, like a boarding pass thing, and directed me to board an elevator.
You didn't have to pay anything.
No, and I said, you know, what is the cost? And he said, you know, it's taken care of.
Oh, you did ask.
Yeah, I did.
It's taken care of, right. It's been taken care of, all right.
And I then went over. I took a very short ride on maybe three floors on an elevator.
Right.
Stepped out into a walkway.
Right.
Which led into a large circular craft. Although it was more,
wait a minute. So you go in LaGuardia, you go to a boarding ramp. Is that accurate?
Well, it was more like a walkway. I guess we could call it a ramp, but you had this.
I mean, were you following directions to this, or had they given you directions to it?
It just opened up into that space that led directly into the vehicle.
And so right at LaGuardia, it opens up and you walk on board a saucer.
Absolutely.
And it was shaped as a saucer?
It was circular on the inside. I had not seen the craft at that time.
In other words, you went from the building to the interior of the craft.
Exactly.
And inside, as best you can describe it?
Very luxurious, not crowded, a series of settee-type lounges. Around the circular sides of the cabin area, there was an attendant that told me to be seated.
Can you a typical flight attendant?
I wouldn't say that they were typical. The outfits that they were wearing in terms of their clothing.
Yes.
Was, again, we're talking about a time before a lot of the new Lexans and plastics, but it was a very radiant material.
Really?
Kind of a silver blue.
Were these females, males?
This, again, was a female.
A female, okay.
And, you know, she made me comfortable. She said it would be a very short flight.
Were there others on the flight?
Yes, there were. There were several other individuals. There was an older gentleman.
Okay.
And there was a young young child.
And a young child. Okay, so that's it?
Yeah.
Oh. And how much of the craft did the three of you as passengers occupy? I'm trying to get a sense of the size.
Probably, I would think that the craft in actual size was maybe 100 feet in diameter.
And so it could have probably held how many?
Oh, it probably could have. The way it was seated, probably 25, 30 people quite comfortably. But it wasn't, it really was not, you know, it's not like your typical airplane.
I've got that.
A transport craft.
Yeah, I've got
this
that.
This was very luxurious accommodation.
And you're still calm. I mean, at this point, the average person's going to be totally freaking out. The Jupiter flight, I mean, what does that sound like? Come on. Around craft. We all know that our airplanes aren't round. Not the civilian versions, anyway. So, I mean, you've got to know that you're, you know, I can't say you were abducted. It sounds like you went willingly.
I went very willingly.
Okay, good. Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
And
still you're not freaking out. You're just taking all this in.
And the energy, again, now, everyone that I had been associated with from the point that I met her had this same aura of energy, and this energy continued to permeate me. And the only thing that I would say is that I thought that was as good as it got, but when I actually disembarked from the craft, it got even better.
Well, that's way ahead. I've got a lot of questions here.
Okay.
I mean, were you in a seat?
Yes, I was. I was sitting in a lounge. And it was covered with a leather-like, I don't know if it was leather, but it was a leather-like material. And it was very light in color.
Hmm.
And there were digital readouts on, like, a console between the seats were actually set so that a couple of people could sit, not side by side, because there was, like, a console in the center between those seats.
Huh.
And there was a digital readout, clock-like device, that was registering three different time periods.
Really?
Yeah.
No little pouch with an in-flight, hi, you're on a gray 54 saucer, please note the exit location.
No, it wasn't.
And still you're calm. So you looking back on this, Robert, you had to be in some way artificially calm. There's no way that any normal person could go through this experience without dread. Some dread.
Well, the only thing I could say is that if you experience that energy, that would be the only kind of...
So you think the energy then is part of what put you in the mental state that allowed this to go down without you totally having a heart arrest?
Absolutely. I think that I feel and know that we are multi-vibrational beings.
Yes.
That have the ability to resonate at different frequencies. And I know that they boosted my frequency
mm-hmm.
to a level.
Okay.
That not only was I able to do this, but I was able to experience the whole experience without any fear or without any trepidation as far as the actual trip.
All right, what about questions? I mean, there was an attendant there. Weren't you peppering somebody with questions about, excuse me, what is this craft? Where am I going? Well, you knew you were going, of course, you know, to the briefing, but I mean, where? Were you asking any questions, or were you just sitting there calmly taking all this in?
No, it actually, the craft took off quite quickly after I was seated.
Oh.
And I looked out the observation port.
In what manner did it? Oh, good. Okay, you had a window. So in what manner, how did this thing take off?
Well, there was no feeling of movement or acceleration.
Really?
None whatsoever. And when I looked out the portal, which was probably, 13, 14 inches in diameter.
Yes.
I saw the view of the Earth as we moved off from the planet.
Oh?
And when
so
I first...
So, do you think you were going... I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you think you were going straight up? Was it your impression you just went straight up?
Probably a bit of an arc. Because as I watched, I saw the Earth grow smaller, going from the size of perhaps a quarter down to about the size of a dime.
You mean?
And I just absolutely, it just absolutely amazed me.
So are you telling me the first time you looked out that the world was already down to the size of a quarter?
That's correct.
Oh. So, you felt no excitement. That's very interesting because, of course, as you know, trying to escape the Earth's atmosphere requires a very great deal of oomph, as in millions of pounds of thrust, and you feel many G's as you accelerate to 18,000 miles an hour in a craft that we build to get away from the Earth. But, I'm told that in these kinds of craft that you're describing, the effects of gravity and acceleration are somehow negated so that you felt nothing is very interesting.
Yeah, they do it different.
Obviously.
They really do.
So you look out, you're already in space, and the Earth is rapidly fading in the window.
Absolutely. And, I'm just absolutely amazed. And I'm just taken back by the entire experience that's happening to me.
And how was everybody else in the craft reacting? The other two passengers and the crew and all the rest during how can you describe the length of the flight?
The length of the flight was very short. I would say the flight took probably what I would consider to be 2 to 3 minutes.
2 to 3 minutes?
Maybe a little longer. And I looked down at the digital displays and they were just spinning.
Oh. So
they were like
okay.
Just moving.
So then it may 2 to 3 minutes of what you consider to be our time, linear time, a lot could have happened in that 2 to 3 minutes.
Absolutely. I think there's an experiential difference in time. There's some kind of a time dilation or I don't want to use the word warp, but I don't know what else to use. It's definitely a compressed. There's a whole change in time thing that we can talk about. We talk about how long the experience actually took.
Right. What do you know what the digital displays were indicating? Were they a measure of time, distance, speed? Do you have any idea at all what they meant?
I believe that they meant Earth time, Jupiter time, and one other time. But I don't know what the other time was. But I didn't look at them and just gaze at them and understand them. I was so caught up in what was happening that, that I didn't take time to try to understand it, Art.
No, that's fair enough. So in 2 to 3 minutes of linear time, you were landing?
Right. We landed.
Do you actually remember any process of, well, you felt no acceleration, so you wouldn't feel deceleration, I suppose, but were you viewing anything that you were approaching?
No, I didn't. I actually was looking around the cabin area, and the attendant came back towards me, and she said, we'll be landing and disembarking, and you'll be met as you disembark from the craft.
That's a very good place to hold everybody up. So relax, Robert. You're doing fine. The ability to describe in as much detail as I've pushed him for so far, this kind of thing is absolutely incredible. I mean, This happens to people, folks. What you're hearing about actually happens to people. They are taken sometimes. They go willingly, sometimes not so willingly. At any rate, we'll explore what happened to Robert Miles in depth and in detail. You're going to the briefing, in fact, shortly.
Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
You are on a ride with Robert D. Miles, one he took not too long ago, and you're going to get the briefing in detail coming up. By the way, tomorrow night, indeed, one caller toward the end of the hour was correct. Major Ed Dames is going to be here, affectionately known as Dr. Doom. Pretty rough stuff, so if you have a hard time handling the kind of thing that Dr. Doom does, you're not going to want to listen to that program. For the rest of you, see you tomorrow night, huh? Once again, Robert D. Miles. Robert, I want to just very quickly pick up on a detail. Adriana from Paso Robles, California, fast blast me. We have this computer thing they can do on the website, send me messages. I need to ask this question. If he was sleeping when she came, now you did say actually you were awake, but here's the presumption. If you were sleeping or near sleep or just up from sleep when she came, were you transported to New York and LaGuardia in your sleeping attire or what?
Well, actually, I'm thinking that I had clothes on. My sleeping attire, you know, frankly, I sleep in the nude. So I didn't have pajamas
So you were dressed, you were just dressed out of the blue, or you were dressed because you had awakened?
I was awakened and had already actually gotten dressed.
Okay.
And I'm sorry that I omitted that detail.
That's all right. I didn't. Yeah, I don't expect you to hit everything. It's just that there was a question out of the blue.
That's so a good one, too.
Yeah. All right. So now, presumably, you've just landed on Jupiter. Small point here, but, you know, Jupiter, it's such a big place. Robert, it's just so big that the gravity alone would turn you into jelly if you were on Jupiter. So describe what happened, I guess, when the craft comes down. It lands. She said we're about to land. The landing occurs. Anything special there? And then what?
Nothing special on the landing. Disembarked down a rampway. Looked back. And a beautiful saucer-shaped craft that I was getting out of, probably 150 feet in diameter.
A perfect saucer?
Well, as I recall, it was, you know, it had the saucer shape It had the portals. It was more rounded on the top and the bottom.
Okay.
Like, you know, and I hate to go back to the traditional saucer photography and those kind of things, but, you know, I've seen images posted on the web and in different places of pictures of craft that look very similar to what I actually was aboard.
Robert, I want to read you something that somebody named Roger sent me. Who says, "Hey Art, I've been following the UFO phenomena for 33 years, and I'm troubled by the fact that certain subjects can't or won't be discussed publicly, even by the UFO researchers or advocates who acknowledge them among themselves." And boy, what an example he gives. He says, "Many UFO researchers have noted that UFOs have changed their appearance over the years." Now, it's not just the viewer's interpretation, like in the 1970s, they were typically saucer shaped metallic craft. Not so today. Indeed, it turns out that UFOs do indeed seem to change with the times and appear, key line coming up here, and appear as we expect them to. They appear as we expect them to. Now, that's interesting. So could it be that your vision of what it looked like was filled by your own expectation or predisposition of what you thought it ought to be?
You know, it's possible if I hadn't have had the rest of the experience. And, you know, and I'm certainly not the person to judge whether or not, you know, my mind was filling in the images.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I know is that at the time this occurred, that's what it looked like.
Okay.
And that's what I was aboard.
And you could see the open ramp, obviously, because you had just come down it?
Oh, absolutely. I was met there by the lady that had materialized in my stateroom.
Okay.
She was there to meet me and to greet me. And what was incredible was the fabulous array and the aura and the energy and the colors that were there on the surface of the planet. It was the most, and the energy sensation was even heightened.
Okay, so again, this energy and light show that you experienced in your cabin when all this began, you felt that same energy, any of the same light show going on?
Light show was gone. It was replaced by this. The whole scenery,
okay,
and the whole vista.
Yeah. Okay. Now,
the most incredible sky.
Okay. Exactly. What were you seeing? Was there a city in front of you? Were you at an obvious airport or landing place, or what?
I was at an actual what would probably be described as a spaceport, and it had buildings and structures that were white and marble-like looking.
Okay.
They were not particularly tall. They you know, they might be 6 or 7 stories. They weren't terribly imposing. I wasn't in the middle of a large metropolitan area.
Buildings like our buildings?
Very architecturally, I would say they were interesting, but not unusual in terms of things that someone would call, you know, a way out, far out, spacescape, like you see in a lot of the science fiction stuff.
Right, okay.
But not overly imposing. I was met by her and several other individuals and conducted into one of the buildings.
All of these individuals appearing to be human?
They were very human in appearance, Art. And they wore like a flowing robe,
okay,
attire.
All right.
And, you know, it was conducted fairly quickly.
These were, I don't know, I just don't know how to ask it. I mean, like middle-aged human people, men, women,
right.
Administrators.
Men and women.
Men and women. Okay.
And conducted into what I would consider to be like kind of like an auditorium area, and told to have a seat, and was then introduced to the individuals that would brief me.
Uh-huh.
And what there were also other people there, Art, in at the briefing. And I would estimate that there were probably another 50 individuals. And I would think that many of those individuals were from planet Earth.
And appeared to be other
individuals like myself, there for the briefing.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if they all were from planet Earth.
But they all appeared to be humanoid?
They appeared to be humanoid. I didn't see any of the kind of stuff that you saw in the Star Wars bar scene.
Okay. All right. So, the briefing, what the heck happens?
Well, first of all, it was a briefing of hope. It was a briefing that was directed at hopefully changing the conditions on planet Earth. And although it wasn't all positive in the sense that...
Well, I need a lot more detail than this.
Okay,
I understand it was hope, but exactly how did the briefing manifest itself? Did someone walk on and talk to you? Were you given vision, seeing things? What?
It was a combination of those things. There were two individuals,
right?
Regent Varsh and Exeus. Varsh.
They gave their names.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Regent Varsh is a full Federation starship commander. His starship is a Titha, and it's a 3-mile-long spacecraft that was on the backside of Jupiter. Exeus was what would be called the high priest of the Federation, or the spiritual, if you would, mentor, who was responsible for Varsa's development and for many, many lifetimes directing the affairs of individuals both on the mother planet, which is the seat of the Federation government, and also affecting the affairs on planet Earth.
You know, obviously, this sounds like something dragged out of Star Trek, and you've got to realize how crazy this sounds to people. Do you?
Well, yeah, I realize that, and I also realize that it's very important to get the word out, and that is the reason that I wrote the book Safe Space. And
yeah, fair enough. So what word? I mean, what was the meat of the briefing? You were shown what?
Okay, first of all, I was told a bit about the Federation and about the... Remember that this happened prior to Star Wars.
Okay.
That the Star Wars movies had not been made.
Okay.
And the discussion of the Old Republic, the discussion of, you know, the centralized form of controlling government had never been broached. And any talk of a new republic and its effect on other planets had not hit mainstream movies, television, or whatever.
Okay.
Varsh had been sent on a mission to destroy the planet by the Federation.
What planet? Ours?
Planet Earth.
Planet Earth.
The Federation had been in control. A Class 3 civilization had been in control of millions and millions of systems for millions of years. And they had used a principle which was called Zionist's principle, which is really very, very pertinent to what we're talking about tonight. And that principle is control, the control of populations, planets, and systems.
That figures.
And that principle, Art, is that they never attack a population or planet directly. They always attack the leaders. And they remove the leader because what happens when you remove a sun from a system, Art? What happens to the rest of the planets?
I don't know. It's like asking what happens when you remove a governor.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, all of the other planets spin out of control. And that's exactly what happens with a population or with a group of people or with, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a solar system or whatever. If you remove the leader,
yeah,
then everybody else goes home to do something else.
Yep, cut off the head of the snake.
Exactly.
Decapitation, it's called.
And that's exactly the principle that the Federation used. And what was shown to me and told to me and discussed with me was that the Federation had been removing leaders from all over the, you know, the star systems and had been placing them on a prison planet. And that prison planet is Earth.
Huh? Yeah, I shouldn't laugh at that. We're a prison planet for the leaders of that have been banished from other star systems.
Gathered from all over the universe. That's right. And imprisoned here on Earth.
Well, I
and
knew we were pretty rowdy, but this is
yeah,
is really pushing it, so we're all a bunch of convicts from elsewhere. Not all of us, I guess. Some
not of all us, of us, yeah. But a large number. And many, many people have memories and have experiences that, you know, from time to time flash in their minds or emerge in their life. And what I've come to understand is that if those same principles were applied today to the wars and to the things that are going on in the world, if, you know, if we waged wars against leaders instead of populations, you know how short our wars would be. And, of course, that isn't used at all.
Well, actually, we have a law against that.
Yeah, well, of course we do. But because that's what works. And the Federation knew that very well. I also, you ask about images and impressions and projections.
That's
I saw images of the past, of the ancient civilizations, Atlantis, Lemuria.
You saw all that on, you saw all of that on Earth?
I saw...
In other words, they showed you images of Lemuria, for example, prior to the Great Flood.
Exactly. And the tilting of the planet, which was the method that has been used to tilt the Earth on its axis, which devastates the populations and, you know, changes the whole echo structure, had been used many, many times on Earth. And you know yourself, you probably studied Earth changes and how many times the Earth has gone through these cycles.
Yes.
But each time the civilization is allowed to emerge and each time remnants of the populations and remnants of the technology is allowed to exist. And that was the mission that Varsh was sent on originally by the Federation. And Exeus, his mentor and his tutor, prepared him to the point where when he arrived to do that mission, he actually had a change of heart. And his mission became one of hope and helping the planet rather than devastating the planet.
Why? And, why did he change his mind?
Well, the reason he changed his mind is that he himself was one of those leaders. And as he developed an awareness, which is one of the things that happens through the process that the Federation uses, they're able to not only allow the individual access to their past life memories, but also to be able to deal with the transmigration and transformation of matter energy and are able to allow the individual to become more and more capable, powerful, and aware. Exeus had implanted the concept of the Safe Space Project and the concept of helping the planet into Varsh and nurtured that over many, many thousands of years and lifetimes.
But are you suggesting we are all and all populations are controlled?
I sure am, Art. And I'm saying that so many people out there are engaged in war, poverty, disease, starvation, and battling against one another with opposite goals.
Yes.
When in reality, it has nothing to do with who they really are or what they're really all about. And if a person is able to, first of all, discover the truth that we're not evil, we're basically good, and that this whole mechanism of power and control and possession is a series of implanted goals and fears that are induced and actually enlarged upon.
So they're like our, to us, they are God, right? Is that too outrageous?
You know, they have godlike abilities.
Okay.
No question about that.
All right. I do too. All right. This is quite some story. I don't know. It's like a cross between Star Trek. Well, no, it is Star Trek, sort of. However, the concept of a federation isn't so far-fetched, actually, since that's how everything politically develops everywhere. Then why not in the larger worlds that are out there? You'll have to decide for yourself as you listen to Robert, but this is quite some story. From the high desert in the middle of the night, you're listening to Coast AM.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Boy, it's fact. Sometimes you get more of a ride than you expect. Robert D. Miles is my guest, and what began in a kind of an interesting, gentle way just took off like a rocket ship, like one just went out of the park in New York, you know? So we'll get back to Robert in a moment. All right, in the beginning of the program, I took quite a special effort to, when I first introduced Robert and got him on the air, to sort of take him through what his life had been, what he had done, and the kind of work he had done, which was very normal, and the kind of thing he had done, building boats that was very adventurous, and sailing to Hawaii, and on and on. All very normal stuff. And However, Robert, when you start talking about, Star Trek, Star Wars kind of stuff and federations and battles between these guys and these guys, and you start getting stuff like Jim here from Littleton, Colorado, who writes, this guy inhaled a few too many epoxy fumes when he was building those boats. Next thing you know, he's going to tell us the Federation killed Kennedy. Jeez. Well, you know, that's the kind of thing you're going to get. You've got to understand, when you start talking about the kind of things you laid out in the last 10 minutes or so, you know, people are going to say, hey, we're dealing with whack here.
Yeah, I can appreciate those kind of comments, and I'm quite prepared for it, Art.
Well, all right. The briefing now. So forget, I guess you can't forget, but there's Federation politics. There they are. What does Earth have to do with all of this? Everything's under control. Where's Earth headed with all of this? So, and did they show you our future, our past, our present predicament? I mean, what's the deal?
Yeah, not only did they show me the past, they showed us the possible future. And I think this is the important thing, is that we can change the future.
What was the possible future, Robert? The
possible future is airing on your program and on the web every day. And that's the cataclysms, the planetary changes, the war, the insanity, the breakdown of society, the poverty, the disease, the ignorance.
Yeah, all of that describes it pretty well, all right?
And you know, you've had a lot of guests, and you'll have a lot more that'll talk about that future. And that future is possible, but not necessarily. Does that have to happen?
I thought you were describing the present state of the planet.
I think that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, yes. In other words, that we continue in this desperate, crazy existence we have right now, and it gets worse. The weather changes, the earth changes, all of it as one possible disastrous future.
And, you know, I don't think that there's everyone out there that wants that outcome. And I think that we as individuals and as a collective group that is connected up can make a change in that reality. Because reality, as I've been told and shown, is basically agreement. And that if we can agree to rid ourselves of these, I won't call them negative impressions, although we're certainly being bombarded with negative impressions all the time, but with those negative possibilities, that we can take back control, we can wrestle back control of our planet and of our future. And we don't have to experience that level. Now, to say that we won't, you know, I have no idea. That really hangs in the balance. And that's one of the reasons I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, is because the message is we need to change that. And we need to have examples and models, and we need to know about, and thanks to you, and other people like you, we hear about the good things, too. We hear about the new types of energy devices, and we experience the changes in society every day that are for the good and for the better. Because mankind can work together. This, you know, we can.
And how is this supposed to occur? How is this sudden agreement where there's been none previously supposed to happen?
Well, the amazing thing is that we now have the digital network. We now have the internet. We now have the ability, and it
is
happening tonight, that the word can get out.
What is the word, though? Just that we can agree? I mean,
no.
That's like Rodney King.
No, the word is,
yes,
that we can work together and that we can begin to connect up and innovate and bring out the innovation. And there needs to be a safe space. There needs to be...
Define safe space.
A safe space is a location and place and a time where things can be manifested that are positive and that are earth-changing.
Like what? Like what?
Well, like the Safe Space 1, which is a large vessel that is part of my mission to build... It's 255 feet long and 153 feet wide.
Oh, my.
Which would hold
You're supposed to build a craft?
Absolutely, and it's on the front of the cover of the book.
And what kind of craft is this?
This is a watercraft that is a terrestrial craft, and it's an example of peace and harmony and people working together, built by the Safe Space team.
In order to do what?
To serve as an example and a model and a, like a focal point or a lens. Because, you know, as humans, we tend to gravitate towards the things that we can touch and feel, you know, what are real.
We do, and you're starting to lose me a little. You're supposed to build this craft to demonstrate something?
To demonstrate that people can work together. It's like many people aren't aware that the United Nations was originally supposed to be aboard a ship that would travel the oceans of the world.
Too bad they didn't go with that idea.
Yeah, it sure is. And the land was donated in New York.
Yes.
To be able to put it there.
Yes.
But the Safe Space One, which is one of the projects, an island community called Genesis 2, which again, I mean, there are so many innovations and technologies just from my site being... On your website, I've already had individuals send me information on power systems to propel the craft. And these are not, you know, these are not nuclear power systems, or these are innovations. And
this craft would operate on the oceans. It would be a floating...
It would be a floating community of people who were taking an example
okay.
and demonstrating...
Okay, so if I'm getting this correctly, then I just want to be sure I'm tracking here. This would be a large ship that would be a virtual floating community that would be an example of this new way that things could be on Earth.
Exactly.
And,
you know, and the good news is that this doesn't have to be heavy. I mean, there's hope out there for people to do things that are positive. There's, you know, there's everything from health clinics and organic farms.
Yeah, I'm getting the picture. This safe space community floating on the ocean, you've got to understand the mere implication of the name, suggestion of the name, safe space, and being out on the ocean implies, I guess to many minds, certainly to mine, that there's going to be brutal hell going on in the world, and so this is a safe location from it. That's what the name would imply.
Well, hopefully that would not occur.
There's a but here, isn't there? But if it does, that is what it's for. Am I getting that correctly?
No, it's not really for that. It could be used as a safe space for people, but there also would be island communities, and there would also be organic farms, and there would also be, if you would call them model cities, where people would be doing the same thing. Not everyone wants to go to sea, and as the conditions change and things get better, the lifestyle on the planet becomes totally different. It becomes one of harmony and people working together, and those things can take place. I'm sure you realize that just in a matter of a few days, the whole consciousness.
But you're not talking about, I mean, unless you're talking about dumping mass Valium or something. We live on a planet where people agitate, fight, have disagreements with each other, have gigantic political disagreements, have large-scale disagreements that we call wars. I mean, this is our world today.
That is our world, but that's also our manipulated world. That's the world that we've been conditioned to live in. And if we throw off that conditioning, and if we begin to not only...
Why are we conditioned to be that way?
Well, we're conditioned that way because of the level of implant technology that has been employed on the planet.
Uh-huh.
And that the whole power structure and the whole direction that our population has been directed, not only in the United States, but literally the world, is one of being under control.
All right.
Rather than being free.
With regard to the aliens, and I will call them that, Robert, I just don't know how to put this to you, but there are a lot of people, Robert, who believe that the kind of thing that you're talking about, the kind of all will be roses and wonderful and we can all get along and the human race just isn't this way and it's going to be this rosy hand-holding world in the future. A lot of people think that they, whoever they are giving people like you these kinds of stories to cause the population to accept what should be the unacceptable, and that is the virtual enslavement of the human race. That, yes, there are, as you suggest, implants going on. There are abductions and experiments that are being conducted on human beings. You know about all of that, right?
Sure.
Huh. So there are many who believe people like yourself have been fed, you'll excuse me, Robert, but a line of bull in order to have that accepted so that when it does happen, people will willingly accept it. Have you considered the possibility that you were lied to?
Absolutely. Not only considered the possibility, but I've done an immense amount of research to try to logically and to emotionally come to grips with, what it's all about. I later created an organic farm with windmills, a 140-acre ranch up in northern Arizona where I grew organic food and sold it to the health food stores.
Why?
Because I felt like I needed to understand the process of what these things that we were going to do as a society we would have to go through. And, I firmly believe that first of all, there is no shortage of food on the planet. Bucky Fuller in the World Game, clear back in the 60s, created the model that showed that there was adequate resources, and even at that time, adequate technology to be able to feed and house and clothe the population of the planet.
Where is that technology?
Where is it?
Yes.
That's a good question, Art. It's certainly not being applied, is it?
No.
And his the minute that he had developed the World Game model in Lincoln, Nebraska, his funding was cut off.
Now, you see, I didn't know about that. I mean, other than Buckyball Soup or something, I don't know what he did that leaves us with evidence that all of this technology to improve everything existed then or now or ever. How do we know that?
Well, basically, I would invite you to study a little bit about Bucky Fuller. You know, the geodesic dome was just one of his structures, but
yes.
He went on to say that the basic cause of the shortages and those kind of things was the transportation and collection centers that were put in. You know, I mean, just look at what our government does on the whole food supply thing in regard to paying for not planting and for, creation of, how many tons of oranges do they dispose of every year to keep the price leveled and all those different things. But really there's a much greater issue here.
And that is?
The issue is that we need to connect up, and you're doing it. I mean, you of all people are the great master of giving people the opportunity to get the good news out. And I thank you for that.
And that was your mission, get the good news out.
No, that wasn't my mission. My mission was to come back.
Yes.
And to actually write the story Safe Space.
Right.
And the story is much more extensive than we've talked about. It is developed to the point where the Safe Space 1 is built.
Wait a minute. It's built?
The ship itself is in the story.
It's not actually in the physical world built.
No.
Okay.
No,
very important distinction.
and that part of the process is that the recruiting of the Safe Space team is done by an ad that's put in newspapers and on the Internet. If you have the spirit of adventure and you're willing to work...
So you have ads in?
Come sail with us.
You have ads in? Have you actually put them in?
No, but I've got them in the book, and they're up on my website.
You plan to put them in?
Yeah, that's part of my mission. I want to get the... First of all, the book was just published in June.
Right.
And right now, we're just beginning the process of putting the information out. But the story contains the whole skeleton and of the briefing of what the series of events that would lead to the creation of the ship and the forming of the Safe Space team, which is composed of 80 men and women plus children that build the vessel and actually carry on the process of launching the ship and beginning the mission on planet Earth.
Now I think I see why they got you, because you're a ship builder. Makes sense?
Makes sense.
So you had experience in the field. So you have more or less been directed to, or what would be the right word, enlisted to, build this ship for them. Really for us, but by their direction.
And not only to build it, but during the process of building it, to communicate the information, the knowledge, and the message, which is that people can do this. You know, people can prepare for better times. I mean, I'm not saying that people shouldn't prepare for
the worst.
The worst. But they can also prepare for the better. I mean, people out there have a feeling that there's more to being on this planet, Art, and to being a part of something greater. There's like a resonant chord that reverberates when we're told truth and when we're given hope and we're given the opportunity to employ our skills and our worth. To do something that's valuable. And throughout the world, people know that this is not the way it's supposed to be. There's got to be answers, not just problems. You know, we just can't continue as a civilization to rehash the same old problems over and over. There are answers, and the answers are out there.
Well, maybe. Maybe. You have not yet convinced me that you have the answers. You sort of like a politician, Robert, who I don't know, has, it's like, you know, the promises, a chicken in every basket, and it sounds so good. The world will get together and we'll all live together and make, you know, food that is grown in just the right way and eat right and do all the rest of this sort of stuff, but I don't know. I just don't know. We'll be back.
Take a ride. Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It certainly is. My guest is amazing, Robert D. Miles, and he's been there, done that. Where? Venus, actually. Jupiter? I guess it was Jupiter. And he's got one hell of a story. I mean, it's the Federation, folks. It's like the Borg almost. It's the good guys, the bad guys, and Earth, and we're a prison planet, and it's fairly wild stuff. We'll get right back to him. Well, all right, Robert D. Miles is here, and I have several questions, and then we'll go to the phones and take some questions from all of you as well. A rare opportunity indeed. Robert, I'm going to hit you with some fast questions, all right?
Sure.
Did you come back with any physical evidence at all, one shred of physical evidence of what happened to you?
Not in terms of any type of object or material.
Something, yeah.
No, I did not.
Only that which you can tell us about.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And also a lot of love.
Got that. Can you explain, you say in here that our minds are implanted by the Federation. When you say implanted, do you mean, as we've heard from others, implants, things put in people's brains?
I think that the brain itself, as a device, is complex enough and capable of having implants and blocks that don't necessarily have to be physical.
Okay.
That's not to say there aren't physical implants, because
okay.
Many of the alien species that are in contact with the planet are using technology and involving themselves in our society.
Yes, but it is actually your position that no matter how the implants occur, this is done by this, in quotes, Federation, right?
Not entirely, Art.
So that we will fight each other. In other words, we are programmed to have opposing goals, you say, and be as we are on Earth, so divided, so, I don't know what the right word is, in opposition to each other in belief systems and all the rest of it. But that's the purpose of these implants?
Exactly, to keep us in a state of constant turmoil, chaos, and war.
Uh-huh.
Rather than working together, we're divided and we're in conflict.
You talk about replicants. What is a replicant?
A replicant is an anatomic individual. They're an individual that is not imbued with spirit. And replicants,
otherwise known as soulless.
Soulless. Uh-huh.
Are there replicants are with us now on Earth?
Absolutely. And replicants have been in control of this planet and placed in charge for, many, many thousands and thousands of years. And they not only control the planet, they actually control the operation of the planet in terms of its overall monetary system and its overall distribution systems and the whole way we live and
work. And so you would say that a lot of our government officials are replicants?
No, but I would say they're under the control
of replicants.
Of replicants. Replicants are far above the level of the government or the shadow government.
Wow. That's really up there. Above the shadow government.
Yeah.
Well, there's always somebody who's boss, has a boss. You always got a boss, somebody a little bit higher, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You do know, Robert, don't you, how this sounds to everyone?
Well, I don't think it sounds that way to everybody.
Well, actually, you're right. It doesn't. Let me rephrase that. You know how this sounds to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I also know that words are very, very powerful, and they unlock memories and feelings that are deep-rooted in our psyche. And the fact that we're discussing it tonight, you know, the answers don't have to be complex.
So you think the basic good us is something we recognize in ourselves deep down?
Absolutely, and in others. And I also think we recognize it in our planet and in all of the things that work. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about things that don't work. But
yeah,
isn't it
true.
Wonderful
that's
when
true.
Something does work, Art? And there's amazing things that are happening every day, and there's amazing benefits. Like, ask yourself this question. Like, you're familiar with Zachariah Sitchin. In fact, as I'm sure you've interviewed him.
Indeed so. And basically, his story is about as, to some, would appear as whack as what you've been saying. I mean, Zachariah Sitchin says that there's a planet that comes by every now and then, on which there are, which is peopled by a race that, well, frankly, created us, human beings, on this planet, this prison planet you talk about, to mine gold for aliens. Now, that's not any bit wilder than what you're suggesting, and perhaps the two are related. I mean, you're suggesting Sitchin is correct to some degree, or what?
I sure am. And I'm also going to pose the question, you know, why don't we have trace elements of gold in us as human beings? Why do we have copper and iron and minerals? And in my briefing, I was told that gold is one of the vital missing ingredients.
In humans?
In humans.
Oh, God,
and that gold and
this.
The esoteric...
I've heard this somewhere. There's something about... This is a kind of a dim thing, Robert, but there's something good about gold, the actual metal gold, for human beings to either consume or have part of them, or something I've heard recently about the mineral gold.
Right. Well, Lawrence Gardner, in his book,
yeah.
Lost Secrets of the Ancient Ark,
right.
talks about how, you know, down through the antiquity, you know, you have to ask yourself, why did all these pharaohs surround themselves with gold? What about this ORM, the monoatomic gold?
All right, yeah, I'll give you
research.
I'll give you this.
Now.
I'll give you this, Robert. Listen, gold is, and every human I think can relate to this. I don't consider myself gold crazy, but. When you hold a gold coin in your hand, or you hold a solid gold chunk in your hand, there's something that can't even be explained about the reaction that human beings have to that. It is like there's some ancient, buried something about gold that puts it in a separate category. You can hold gold and it feels, ooh, so special. So there is that.
Yeah, and I invite your listeners to, you know, do some research that's being done, you know, by Hal Puthoff and by other individuals on the power of this monoatomic gold and the fact that it's been used in ancient civilizations down since recorded time. And we as individuals, you know, have a requirement for gold within our system. To be able to help make, if you would, the vibrational leap into some of these other dimensions. And a lot of this information, I think, will be forthcoming in the future because science is working on it now. The quantum physicists are dealing with it, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And they're discovering that it has amazing properties.
Well... Again, Robert, at the beginning of the program, I spent a lot of time on you because I knew what you were going to say was going to go pretty far out on a limb. And, you know, to go that far out on a little limb, you got to be sure you got a big limb behind you. And so you had a pretty straight-on early life, nothing crazy, nothing whack, but this thing is so far out of left field to happen to you, or to anybody, for that matter. I just I felt like I had to establish that base before you went off. And even with having done that, it's still pretty out there. But you think you met the people that Zachariah Sitchin's has always talked about?
Well, I think that I didn't meet the Ananuis or the Nemorians, or as he describes them. But the Federation predated and predates that civilization. But certainly their desire for gold and the tribute that is paid to them,
yeah,
and paid by all interstellar civilizations, is gold is a very valuable ingredient. And I think that we're going to see a lot more about that in the future.
Huh. You sold one story. You first wrote Safe Space. That was a short story. And that sold to Columbia Pictures, right?
That's correct, yes. Yeah. And I worked with Peter Gerber and Douglas Trumbull, who did 2001.
Right. That's pretty heavy stuff, I would say, Columbia. And so there are those who will say, you wrote this book and did the, short story and now the book and the motion picture and all the rest of it. It's just something you're doing to sell books or whatever. People say that. I mean, they are saying that. They're on my screen here. How do you answer that?
Well, first of all, I came back very, very much filled with my mission, which was to take this information. It was like I was to be, you know, the herald or the messenger,
yep,
to put the information out. And the I published a short story manuscript, and after the first 1,000 run, one landed in the hand of a producer, which sold the story idea to Columbia, and I worked for 2 years with them. And unfortunately, the Regent Varsh, who actually his mission is to save the planet, ends up being a villain, and fortunately, the whole thing never went into production. So the mission is not fulfilled. With the writing of the Safe Space story and with the establishment of the network, the digital network that's out there now, I think that the time is right. And I think that, the truth, people, when they read it, they'll either sense that it has truth in it or they won't.
Yes.
And, you know, I really believe that we're all seekers, you know, for those answers and for that truth. And we find it, you know, wherever we can and in whatever form is real to us. But there is no question in my mind that there's hope for this planet.
Well, here's something I would really like to know, and I don't know if you gleaned any knowledge of this through all you went through. But, and it's an obvious question, were we, in fact, Robert, created by beings other than that being that we regard as God? Do you have any depth of knowledge in that sort of area at all? Did you glean any greater knowledge about all of that?
You're not speaking of our physical body. You're talking about our essence.
I'm talking about our creation, Robert.
Right, yeah. No, I don't have the answer to that one, and I sure wish I did. But I know that we're definitely part of a much greater...
I mean, were you able to ascertain, for example, any belief system that those of the Federation had?
Well, again, remember that the Federation itself was a very corrupt and controlled society, and still is.
Yes.
And we face the threat of the Federation now.
Well, then we should fit right in.
And the Federation return and the taking of the planet and the carrying out of the mission, which is to create the catastrophe and to go ahead and bring about the cataclysms and all of the negative scenario that we hear so much about, is a possible reality. You know, there's not necessarily going to be a chicken in every pot. That depends on our ability to create a new reality, to bring out agreement that this new reality can manifest.
Uh-huh.
And as far as...
Well, I hate to appear cynical, Robert, but, boy, I don't see it. I don't see this new reality that you're talking about. I see what is going around the world, you know, on around the world. I read about it every night, as you suggested earlier, or at least, you know, twice a week. I get to read about everything that's going on, and the world is headed in a disastrous direction right now. I haven't seen it turn from that. I haven't seen it deviate from that. I see us going squarely down a real rough road, Robert.
Well, I agree with you completely, and I think that's why there's the urgency of getting the word out now, and the urgency of coming together through the digital network and through shows like you have and through examples of things that are working and things that can improve the planet.
But what do you think is going to cause people to believe you? What about this ship that, if it's built, will cause people to believe you or change anything?
Well, they don't have to believe me. They have to believe in themselves. They have to believe that we have the godlike ability to manifest our own destiny, to come to grips with answers, not just the problem. I mean, Art, you know there's answers out there. You know, you talk with some of the greatest minds on the planet, and they have answers. And of course they're suppressed. And of course there's a entire structure that exists on this planet at this time that is designed to lead us to disaster. And we don't want that. We want change. People out there are praying for good, and they're praying for improvement. And there's improvement every day. And what we need is we need a network to broadcast that. And we need to bring this vision and this hope back to us as a people.
Then you're saying you can just do this by talking about it?
Well, I think it can start by talking, but also reading. I mean,
there's gonna
the images and the words, Art, they invoke things in people.
Yes, but there's going to have to be more, Robert.
And leadership.
I wouldn't want to press for example, a demonstration of a miracle, but I'm telling you, in this modern world, Robert, to preach what you're preaching is fine, and there's a lot of people doing it, and the world is still headed down that same rough road we talked about a little while ago. They're preaching their hearts away and using God's name and others in trying to get things redirected. So you're going to have more than good words to turn things around.
Well, and I think that's why we need the demonstrations. We need the communities. We need the examples of people doing things that are positive, and then those need to be shown, and they need to be brought into the minds of people that they can do it too, and that they can work together, and they can create together. I mean, look what we did with our space program when we had the goals, when we were looking at expansion instead of contraction.
Yes.
I mean, look at the miracles that occur every day. And, you know, those are the things that we need to hear about. And those are the things we need to experience personally in our own personal lives, of course.
I don't know if I see miracles every day, Robert. Point one out to me.
Well, I think that all around us are miracles, and I think...
Well, point one out.
Well, to me, just the miracle of being able to communicate to your listening audience that 50 years ago wouldn't even be possible. The miracle of the computer. And, you know, they may seem, you know, they seem miraculous to somebody.
That was a pretty good answer, actually. That was not a bad answer.
I mean, 50 years ago, it would have been impossible. But now it's everyday occurrence. And part of the problem is that we need to appreciate the tools that we have that we've never had before. I mean, this is the opportunity, Art, and you're one of the focal points of it.
Yes.
You bring a lot of hope to humanity. You're the one program that people can tune into to get the word, to get the information, not just the bad news, but the good news.
Oh, man, that's like too much to lay on me, Robert.
Well,
if the world is dependent on me, then the world better start digging a hole. I mean, that's how I feel. As if, I don't mean to minimize myself too much, but we're not going to save the world here. At least I don't think we are. But his words and answers are interesting. I'm going to turn him over to you. We're going to start taking calls here in a moment. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
It certainly is. Imagine going on the kind of ride that Robert claims to have gone on, and then to be sent back with a message to proselytize the kind of message that he's trying to deliver us right now. I mean, it'd be like talking to God. And God would say, Art, I want you to go back to Earth and tell everybody they can live together. You know, the Rodney King times 10. Do your best job. I mean, you would have to say, give me more, Lord. They're not going to believe me. I know these people. They're going to keep acting the way they act. I need more. I need to give me something. Give me miracles. Something. We'll be right back. Pretty wild stuff. All right. Robert believes that Federation overseers are in charge of our world. We are once again ready to voyage into space and from there to the stars, that we're on the brink of deliverance into our rightful place as galactic citizens and leaders of millions of populated planets. It's kind of like the message that was given to Jodie Foster in Contact, isn't it, Robert?
Oh, I think that was a terrific movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was this kind of like that, wasn't it?
Well, I think we all dream of a better world, and we all, you know, pray for a better world and for a better life.
Yes.
And I don't think that there's easy answers or you know, easy solutions, but I think the answers and the solutions are out there, and we just as individuals have to be willing to look, and as a civilization we have to be willing.
You almost sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, really? Well, thank you for the
compliment. In a way. I mean, look, let's go to the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Robert. Hello.
Hello, Captain Art. A pleasure to be aboard the HMS Coast to Coast.
Glad to have you, sir.
This is Sean calling from Boise, Idaho, 580 KIDO.
Yes, Sean.
Art, with your permission, I'd like to just pick your guest brain for a second. Robert, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm going to have to first and foremost congratulate you. I liked a little bit about Earth being the harbor for all the universal criminals, kind of like Australia was to Great Britain. I like that touch.
That's right.
But my main question goes back to the very beginning of the story, and I'm going to have to agree with Art. There's something a little ominous about when this lady appeared to you on the sailing ship, gave you directions. You thought yourself to New York. I can believe this really happened to you. But during the story, there was one thing missing that makes it a little scary.
Okay, what?
And that is the human basic need to be curious and to know about things around you. There was a flight attendant, an old man, and a child.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said, can you tell me why we just left the Earth so quickly and I didn't feel it?
Yeah.
Hey, who are these other people? Hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
All of that.
Just hold it right there. Your point is rock solid, really rock solid. He's right. I said the same kind of thing. I mean, I kept asking you if you were in your, you know, what you would consider to be a fully conscious condition, to which you many times replied yes. A fully conscious condition would almost demand conversations and questions and intense curiosity and burning curiosity about what was happening to you.
Well, there's certainly a valid position there, and I understand that, you know, sitting back here now after all these years, looking back on it. But what I would invite you to do is to have a similar experience, to be in the presence of this kind of energy and these kind of beings.
All right, that's a fair answer. In other words, you're saying, but see, you said that you were so fully conscious. Well, maybe in a way you were, but you had to have been, in order for you to not have the natural curiosity that Eve was talking about, and I talk about too, you'd have to be under the influence, which I guess you were in a way, of this energy. So were you?
Well, I would have to say I was almost in a rapture. I mean, the entire experience was so beyond anything that I could imagine.
Okay.
Logically.
All right.
That I, you know, it lifted me right out of my logical mind. Right into a state of awe. And, you know, I was ready to listen.
All right. Oh, yeah. I clearly have that. Okay. Good enough. Good answer. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert. Hello.
Hello. I'm Leah from Parkside, Pennsylvania. I'm listening on WGEL.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you?
Just spiffy.
You sound great.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Miles, the safe space that you're talking about, I think you said you're going to build a ship with a safe space and then you're going to do one on land or something. To me, it kind of sounds like the community you're talking about sounds like a socialist society. And I'd like to know if that's true, and if it's not, what do you see as the differences?
Well, I would say it was a cooperative society.
Well,
in the sense of, if you mean socialism in the sense that everybody puts all their collective energy and takes back from the collective.
Yeah, that way.
Yes.
I suppose that it would be socialistic.
Aha. Uh-huh.
In terms of that. But in the sense of contribution, there's certainly a high demand on all of the individuals to contribute.
And what kind of social structure would there be to this rosy new existence? In other words, it does sound like socialism. So would there be some sort of, to every society, there must come some structure and law and governing and, right?
Well, I think the bottom line is love and cooperation. And as far as I never got into the detailed plan of how the whole social mechanism would work, except that I know that within the starship and within their civilization, they definitely have they have rank and they have levels of
rank
serviceability that of contribution.
They have.
And,
did you hear that, ma'am? They have rank.
Rank.
They have rank.
Well,
so
does the People's Republic of China and their army.
Well said. Thank you very much. You see where that lady was driving you, and I do too. It sounds, on the face of it, though we don't have a lot of details because you say you don't know what social and government structure is like, but it really does sound like the kind of society that scares the hell out of people, you know, sort of a ruled, monolithic.
No, I know.
Hell, dictatorship, you know.
No, not at all. I think it's a structure that has a free flow of information, a free flow of resources and capabilities and contribution. And I wouldn't call it communism. I wouldn't call it socialism. I would call it humankind working together for the betterment of humankind.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Miles. Hello.
Hello, yeah. This is Chad Arden, a longtime listener.
Hello.
1120 KPNW.
Yes, sir, Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, yeah, Robert, if I could real fast. I had done some recently remote viewing under Major Ed Dames. I've been doing that about 6.5 years, and I pick up a little bit on some different items as far as stuff coming up. And as far as what can you see as far as with your ships, supposedly, is that anything that... you know, as far as conventional that you see building them, or how will that work?
Yeah, actually, I see a lot of ships, but I see the Safe Space 1 being physically, dimensionally 255 feet long and 153 feet wide.
Well, you've got that down to
with
science.
Accommodations for about 100 people aboard, and life sustaining, you know, living wall, food supplies, and, you know...
This sounds very expensive. Where are you going to get the money for all this?
Well, you know, one of the things that happens is that the money is basically agreement as well. And hopefully...
Well, what do you mean? Somebody agrees to give it to you, or what?
Well, I mean, let's take a look at the way money is done now. Money is basically just a credit on somebody's books. And currency and capital and all of those things are flowed in the direction of things that need to be produced and generated,
yeah,
and
like,
materialized.
Like your ship.
All right. One of the things that by selling my book and hopefully the production of a movie and the actual capital that will flow from those will go into the building of the ship.
So clearly right now you're saying that all of the capital... From the book and from the movie, should there be one? You're saying publicly right now, all of that would go into the building of the ship.
Well, probably not all of it because, you know, it takes money for
expenses.
To live on and
yes.
expenses and operations and all those kind of things.
But that's
my committed purpose.
After the basics, the rest of it goes to the ship?
And to the, you know, the establishment of the project, which is a lot more than just boats or ships or islands. It's actually the creation of a network of where people can cooperate and come together and exchange products and services. Because worldwide, that's what's needed now.
More trade.
Absolutely. A free flow of exchange of information, services, and products.
All right.
That are basically beneficial for the planet.
All right. First time caller line, your turn with Robert D. Miles. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Nikki, and I'm from Oklahoma.
Okay.
Oklahoma City.
Right.
Hi, Nikki.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
I have three questions to ask you. my first question is about the UFO occupants. Were they Nordic-looking? And second question, have you read the book about the book called The Threat by David Jacobs? And third question...
Well, that's a lot. Let's start off. Were they Nordic-looking?
Not all of them. There were some Nordic, meaning, I suppose, blonde and white, and not necessarily tall.
So not necessarily Nordic.
Not necessarily Nordic.
Uh-huh. Have you read David Jacobs' book, The Threat?
No, I sure haven't.
Okay, it reflects the possibility that they're really not nice guys at all, something that I talked to you about earlier. And number three, ma'am?
Have you had any experience with men in black?
That's a very good question.
That's a great question.
Is it? How great is it? Have you had that experience?
Direct experience where someone has ever come to me and... indicated that they're men in black, no. In terms of possible contact,
yes,
indirectly, perhaps, but not to the point that I could say definitely. But I do believe that the existence of that, network exists.
All right, but what kind of indirect influence or contact have you had? I mean, was someone following you? Did someone tell you were being followed?
No, nothing like that. No.
Like what then?
Well, only that during the time I was working on the motion picture.
Yes.
I felt like it was not understandable to me why the script could not be developed. Why the main characters and the driving force behind the movie,
yes,
instead of being a story of hope, turned into be a story of control and the assassination of the leaders on the planet.
Well, that's simple. That's because that's what Hollywood would want. That's what they would want. What do you think sells?
Well, I don't think Hollywood just wants that, because I think Harry Potter,
well,
and I think there's a lot of good.
In fact, there is an argument, Robert, that you're going to have to deal with. And the fact is that it's brutal. But if you were to have a movie in which the central message had no threat in it, the central message only had the world can be full of peace and love and cooperation, and all of this can replace wars and killing and the strife that humanity goes through, that movie wouldn't get to first base, baby. It wouldn't get to first base.
I agree with you, and there's definitely a threat. The threat is the Federation, and the threat is the catastrophe that faces planet Earth.
But you couldn't convince the people with the script of that, right? Who were modifying the script.
That's correct.
Well, that's my point. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Robert. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hello, Art.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. This is Dr. Bob calling. I'm listening on 1490.
It's great
to hear your program.
Well, thank you.
And I just wanted to let you just share a little few things with you. I was trying very hard to be a physician, and some of these very same things that happened to Robert happened to me. I went about the exploration of this in somewhat of a scientific manner afterwards.
You're claiming a similar experience.
Very similar, except I had three friends of mine who were with me physically while I was going through and describing what was happening to me.
There you have it, Robert. There you have it. Somebody else who claims the exact same thing happened to them. Well, I guess that in itself is a pretty good question, Robert. How many people have come to you telling you that they, too, have been delivered to a similar briefing?
This is the first person I've ever talked to that said that.
You're kidding.
But, no, it's not. But I believe that there are individuals out there that were there, and I believe that they probably have similar aspects of the mission to carry out.
Okay.
And I believe that the show tonight is basically the word that is going out is that it's now time to activate the mission.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert. Not a lot of time. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Art, 3 hours ago, you were wrong about Ed Dames.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. No, I won't be wrong 3 hours from now, nor then. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Robert, and not a lot of time.
Okay. I'd like to talk to Robert.
Well, here he is. Robert?
Hi. How you doing?
Yeah, hi. I'm Bruce from San Diego. I finally got through, and I'd like to ask you some questions. I know that I met you about 20 years ago, and evidently this is a delayed...
It is, and you should not have your radio on.
Okay.
You should turn it off. It'll confuse you. You believe you met him, and we don't have a lot of time here, sir, so if you have questions, fire away.
Okay. I met him 20 years ago, and I want to approach the issue about your cynicism, about his socialism and...
Well, the lady called and reflected on the fact that it sounded socialist. That's what she said.
Right. But anyway, I met him in San Diego, and I was living on a boat. I'm also a sailor, and he was a very warm person, and he actually influenced my life by making me a little less cynical about possibilities, and I can fully appreciate his, I don't know about his experience, his extraterrestrial experience, but I do know that he was a very positive person and gave me a vision of hope.
Well, that is what he does. He gives visions of hope, and he's a very positive person, a whole lot more positive than I am.
Okay, Right. I got that from your comments. And
yes.
It kind of reminded me of the Pay It Forward movie.
Uh-huh.
And it
yes.
actually changed my life to the extent that I became more or less cynical. And I've been more positive in my approach to society. And maybe that little bit of influence is what he's talking about with his changing of the world.
Maybe. Well, there you have it, a virtual testimonial for you, Robert.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Which I certainly didn't expect. But then again, when you jump around on open lines, you never know what to expect. Robert, it has been a pleasure having you here. And thank you. I hope people will go out and buy your book.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, Art, and you've got a great network there.
Good night, my
friend.
Thanks
for having me.
Right, take care. Well, as with all programs, you're going to have to make up your own mind. You listen to people and stories, and you do have to admit, Robert began just as a regular guy, maybe even above average, you know, with a lot of adventure in his life. You can hear it in the repeat if you need to. And the experience he had certainly was extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Well, you make up your own mind. And by the way, hey there, New York, and thank you, WABC. We'll be back tomorrow night with Major Ed Dames, who may still or may not be wrong at that time. See you then. Good night.